Imagine a startup just hitting its stride, revenue doubling, your team exploding from, I don't know, a handful to dozens in just months. It's the kind of thrilling growth story every founder dreams of, isn't it?
It really is.
But what if, beneath that incredible success, a quiet catastrophe is brewing? What if the very foundations of your operations are slowly, silently unraveling, leading to massive hidden costs, customer churn, maybe even putting the entire future of your business at risk?
It's not just hypothetical, unfortunately. It's a terrifyingly common scenario, and it blindsides so many founders. That initial, almost, reckless sprint to innovate and capture market share, it often leads to neglecting the very operational groundwork that allows a company to not just grow, but to truly endure and scale sustainably.
And that right there is our mission for this deep dive. Welcome to the deep dive, where today we're pulling back the curtain on process optimization for scalability. We're going far beyond just making things faster. Our goal really is to show you how every process improvement effort isn't just about efficiency, it's about making your entire operation inherently more adaptable, more resilient,
Exactly.
and truly capable of handling massive increases in volume and complexity without, well, breaking. We're talking about designing processes that genuinely grow with you.
Ensuring that all that incredible innovation doesn't inadvertently lead to collapse. It's crucial.
So to help us navigate this really vital topic, we're drawing heavily from Emmanuel Bakar's insights in Startup Process Improvement Volume 1, Turning Chaos into
A
Cash.
fantastic resource.
Definitely. And we'll also weave in wisdom from our previous deep dives into Lean, Six Sigma, and Agile methodologies.
It all comes together, really, forms a powerful strategy for scalable success.
Okay, let's dive in. Let's unpack this with a truly eye-opening, maybe even a bit scary, cautionary tale. Bakar himself shares the story of Aquahouse, his own startup.
Yeah, this one's potent.
So this was an AI-powered water quality sensor company. They scaled from 5 to 50 employees in just 18 months, revenue doubling quarterly. I mean, on the surface, that sounds like the absolute textbook definition of a founder's dream, right?
It absolutely does. You couldn't ask for better headlines. But here's where it gets really interesting, and frankly, a bit chilling. Behind that explosive growth, Aquahouse was, as you said, silently starting to unravel.
How so? What started going wrong?
Critical, debilitating problems emerged. Things like persistent data stream lag from their sensors, network access issues in remote deployment areas, which is kind of key for their product, and significant logistical delays, just getting the sensors out the door.
Okay, that sounds bad.
And it gets worse. Add to that a surge of customer complaints and inevitably rampant team burnout. People were just fried.
Oof. So, what was the actual damage? The fallout?
Devastating. A direct cost of $150,000, which is huge for a startup. And it nearly delivered a fatal blow to their future. It really hammers home Bakar's core lesson, and it's one we should all remember. Innovation without robust, adaptable processes isn't just inefficient, it's a recipe for collapse.
That's powerful. And what's particularly insidious about it seems like the most innovative companies might be most susceptible to this. Why do you think that is? Is it just focus?
You've hit on a critical, often counterintuitive point. Often, the very focus and passion that drives innovation in a startup, that relentless pursuit of product market fit, the rapid iteration on features, it leaves little bandwidth for the foundational operational work.
Right. You're focused on the shiny object.
Exactly. Founders pour all their energy into the what and why of their product, but maybe not enough into the how their company actually operates day to day. So when growth hits like a tidal wave, those early shortcuts in process catch up, and they catch up fast.
And it becomes a cycle.
A vicious cycle. First, it's, manageable errors, a bit of rework, some delays, things you can maybe handle. But then it snowballs into inconsistent quality, tanked team morale, customer complaints piling up, and ultimately, lost revenue and growth slowing right down. Just when you should be accelerating. It's a spiraling descent.
So after hearing about Aquahouse's near collapse, what's the absolute game changer Bakari points to? What's the shift in mindset a startup needs to adopt to avoid that kind of fate?
It's what he calls the process-first mindset. And this really is a revolutionary approach for startups. It's seeing well-designed processes not as bureaucratic overhead or some annoying necessity.
Which is how many see it, right?
Absolutely. But seeing them instead as true enablers of speed, quality, and innovation, they become the secret sauce for scalability.
But, for a startup moving at lightning speed, doesn't designing processes upfront feel a bit like hitting the brakes? Isn't there a risk of becoming too slow, too bureaucratic, when you're supposed to be lean and mean?
That's a really common misconception, and it's precisely what the process-first mindset counters.
Hmm.
Beccari illustrates this beautifully with what he calls the process-first revolution flywheel. Think of it like this. When you implement effective processes, you naturally enhance profitability. That, in turn, leads to improved speed and quality, which then reduces chaos.
Less firefighting.
Exactly. And with less chaos, you can scale efficiently. Each one of these benefits reinforces the others, creating this powerful momentum that actually accelerates growth while maintaining stability. It's a truly virtuous cycle, not a break.
I see. So it's about building a robust engine, not just, you know, slamming the gas pedal harder on a shaky car.
That's a great analogy.
And speaking of that balance, let's talk about process design for growth, specifically adaptability and resilience. Beccari illustrates a critical equilibrium he calls the process agility balance.
Yes, this is key.
On one side, too little process, what he terms underprocessing, leads directly to chaos, inconsistency, and most critically for our discussion, scaling limitations. You just can't grow effectively.
And on the other side, you've got too much process over processing. That creates the bureaucracy and rigidity we were just talking about, stifling that crucial innovation.
The sweet spot.
The sweet spot, the goal, is right-sized process. This is where you achieve efficiency, consistency, and scalability while preserving agility. It's knowing exactly when to be structured and when to be flexible. It's a balancing act.
Okay, so for our listener then, what are the red flags? What are the symptoms of underprocessing they should be looking out for in their own operations? How do you know you're operating with too little process?
Good question. If you're seeing inconsistent results, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's awful. If you're constantly firefighting, just reacting to problems rather than proactively solving them.
Always putting out fires.
Right. If you feel like you're endlessly reinventing the wheel because there's no standard way to do things, heavy reliance on specific key people. Mm-hmm. You know, Sarah's out sick, everything grinds to a halt.
Oh, yeah, the Sarah bottleneck.
Exactly. And, of course, the big one, just plain difficulty scaling. Things start breaking when volume increases. That's a clear signal.
Okay. If you're seeing those symptoms, it's a clear sign that it's time to apply some core design principles for scalable processes. Beccari outlines what he calls the startup process design principles. Let's walk through them. First, outcome orientation.
Yes. This is all about focusing on what truly matters to the customer, not just internal tasks or outputs. What value are they actually getting?
Makes sense. What's next?
Beyond just the customer focus, Beccari emphasizes appropriate standardization. And the key word there is appropriate. This isn't about standardizing everything in a startup that would be paralyzing.
Right.
But standardizing where it genuinely matters for consistency and predictability. Then, clear ownership, defining who is responsible for each part of the process, avoiding ambiguity and finger pointing.
That's huge. And crucially, minimal viable documentation. This means avoiding heavy, complex, slowing documentation. For a startup, less is often more here, right? You want to be lean.
Absolutely. Keep it light. Keep it useful. For a startup, it's often about embracing good enough for today to create immediate value rather than waiting months for some perfect comprehensive solution that might never materialize or might be obsolete by the time you finish it.
Get something working and iterate.
Precisely. And finally, and perhaps most importantly for sustained scalability, built-in feedback loops. These are crucial for continuous adaptation and ensuring your processes evolve as your business evolves. You have to learn and adjust.
That concept of minimal viable documentation really leads us directly to the idea of a minimum viable process, or MVP.
Exactly. Same principle.
Just like an MVP for products, right? It means implementing the simplest version of a process that meets the basic needs, then iterating based on actual usage and feedback. How does this prevent those common startup killers, the bureaucracy and over-engineering we talked about?
It actively prevents them because you're starting simple and validating with reality. We saw this beautifully illustrated with Cloud Secure, a B2B software startup, and how they handled their customer onboarding.
Yes, the onboarding example.
Instead of creating massive documentation from day one, they used lean startup principles. They started with a simple checklist covering just the critical steps. But, and this is key, they rigorously tracked metrics.
Like what?
Things like time to first value for the customer, the number of support tickets generated during onboarding, and NPS Net Promoter Score, a measure of customer loyalty. And they looked at this data weekly.
Wow, weekly. That's fast feedback.
Very fast. And based on that data, they iterated, going through 5 different versions of that onboarding process.
And the result?
Pretty amazing. Onboarding time was reduced by a remarkable 60%, and customer satisfaction improved by 40%. This perfectly demonstrates how that iterative MVP approach builds scalability. You refine and optimize as you learn and grow.
That iterative approach brings us neatly to rapid iteration cycles, connecting to Agile and maybe even DMAIC.
Absolutely. Agile methodologies, as we've explored before, are inherently suited to the startup environment. They promote flexibility, rapid iteration, responsiveness to change all things a scaling company needs.
And this means that process improvement work itself shouldn't be some massive year-long project. It can be broken down into short, iterative cycles, very much like Agile sprints.
Exactly. It's never a one-and-done thing. You're constantly refining, constantly improving. And we can also adapt Six Sigma's DMAIC methodology, define, measure, analyze, improve, control for startups. The key is speed.
Because Six Sigma often sounds like this long, drawn-out affair, maybe more suited to a large, established enterprise, right? How fast are we talking for a startup DMAC?
Much faster. For startups, think days, not weeks or months, for each phase. You might have a quick alignment session, 1 to 2 days, to define the problem and goals.
Okay.
Measuring, maybe 3 to 5 days to grab the essential baseline data you need. Analyze in 2 to 3 days to really try and pinpoint root causes.
Getting to the why quickly.
Right. Improvement might take a bit longer, maybe 5 to 10 days, because you're actually implementing and testing solutions.
Right.
So the whole cycle delivers tangible improvements in weeks, not months or quarters. That fits the rapid startup cadence.
That speed must mean making some trade-offs, though, like maybe accepting good enough data.
Absolutely. This rapid cycle often means accepting good enough data and analysis. You prioritize quick iteration and learning over academic perfection. That's a mindset shift crucial for startup survival. You can't wait for perfect information.
Got it. And what about measurement and control in this rapid cycle? Do you still need rigorous data, or is it more about trends?
For pragmatic measurement, you don't try to measure everything. That's a recipe for analysis paralysis. Use sampling if you need to. Focus on maybe 3 to 5 critical metrics, the ones that really matter.
Keep it simple.
Use simple tools like spreadsheets. Leverage existing data wherever possible. It's always about balancing precision with practicality. Then, for the control phase, you design simple, sustainable controls. Don't create a new bureaucracy.
How do you do that?
Integrate monitoring into existing systems, maybe regular team meetings, existing dashboards. Visual controls, like simple charts on a wall, are great for this. The real goal is to build an improvement mindset into daily habits, making it the new normal, not some extra task.
And for a real-world example, let's go back to CloudSecure. As they grew, they started seeing an explosion in security configuration errors, a huge frustrating problem for them and their customers.
Yeah, a nightmare scenario for a security company.
So they applied these adapted Six Sigma principles, focusing specifically on reducing the variation in how configurations were done. They gathered data, analyzed the process, identified root causes.
And the results were dramatic. They cut configuration errors by an incredible 87% within just 60 days.
Wow, 87% in 2 months.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It directly shows how reducing that variation leads to scalable, predictable results. That kind of predictability is absolutely critical as you scale up volume.
Indeed. And this leads us naturally into thinking about automation as a powerful scalability enabler.
A very powerful one, if used correctly. When we look at the automation spectrum for startups, it really ranges quite broadly. You've got basic process automation, often called RPA, that's robotic process automation.
Automating simple, repetitive digital tasks.
Right. Then you move up to advanced automation, things like workflow tools and system integrations. Then intelligent automation, which starts bringing in AI and machine learning components. And finally, cognitive automation, which is more like full AI decision making.
It's important to remember, though, that automation isn't just about making things efficient in isolation. It's about magnifying that efficiency for truly scalable operations. But isn't there a common mistake here? People just try to automate the existing mess?
You've hit on the absolute Q-trap. This is critical for scalability. The most sophisticated technology simply cannot fix broken processes. It's the garbage in, garbage out principle, but faster. Automation doesn't fix a bad process. It just accelerates a bad process, amplifying your problems. It's about magnifying good efficiency, not speeding up chaos. We saw this vividly with TechConnect, a technology company drowning in customer service issues.
Okay, tell us about TechConnect. What was going on there?
Their average customer wait time was a painful 22 minutes. 83% of issues required transfers between agents, meaning nobody could solve the problem the first time. And they had a whopping 47% annual customer churn, just hemorrhaging customers.
Ouch. What did they try first? Just hire more people.
That was the obvious fix, right? Throw more bodies at the problem.
Right.
But it failed. It just added cost without fixing the underlying issues because the process itself was fundamentally broken.
So their approach shifted. They adopted that process-first strategy we talked about.
Exactly. They used a lean process mapping, which was eye-opening. It revealed that an astonishing 64% of their support activities were non-value-added from the customer's perspective. Just waste.
64%.
Yeah. Then they used Six Sigma analysis to identify the critical factors driving that wait time and dissatisfaction before they implemented any new technology like Amazon Connect. The technology was applied after the process optimization.
It's like cleaning up the kitchen before you install the fancy new appliances, isn't it? Otherwise, you just have shiny appliances in a messy kitchen.
That's a perfect analogy. And the results for Tech Connect were transformative. Their response time plummeted by 89%, from 22 minutes down to just 2.4 minutes.
Incredible.
Customer churn decreased by 68%, from that awful 47% down to 15%. Support costs actually went down by 42% despite handling more tickets because they were so much more efficient.
Wow.
Customer satisfaction shot up to a 91% rating. Agent turnover, another huge cost, was reduced by 78%. They even successfully bridged operations between their Nigerian and American teams, improving global consistency.
That is just a powerful demonstration of how process-first thinking, then automation, enables scaling throughput, volume, and quality. It makes operations inherently more adaptable and resilient. It really drives home that true digital transformation isn't just about implementing new tech. It fundamentally changes how your startup creates and delivers value.
It's an opportunity to rethink processes from the ground up. Ask that radical question. What would this process look like if we designed it from scratch today with the technology we have now? That clean sheet approach can reveal amazing simplification opportunities.
And that kind of thinking leads us to building integrated architectures for enduring value, especially when you're looking at, say, holistic process architecture for global scaling.
Yes, because expanding globally presents its own unique set of challenges: time zones, language, culture, regulations.
It gets complex fast.
Very fast. Successful global expansion requires balancing standardization, having consistent core processes across locations with localization, which means adapting appropriately to local conditions. It's a spectrum. Not a binary either choice. And getting that balance right is absolutely key for scaling globally.
We have a great example of this, global freight logistics. They were really struggling. Fragmented operations, only 77% on-time delivery, which is terrible for logistics.
Yeah, that's not going to cut it.
And a painful 27-day average order to delivery cycle. Their previous attempts to fix things had focused on siloed tech solutions in different regions, which just didn't work. So how do they tackle this global challenge?
They went back to basics with a process-first approach, but they integrated multiple methodologies, Lean, Six Sigma, Agile, even Kaizen for continuous improvement. This created true end-to-end process visibility across the globe.
Seeing the whole picture.
Exactly. They could then standardize the core processes that needed to be consistent while still allowing for necessary regional variations where it made sense.
And the results must have been significant.
Astounding, really. On-time delivery improved from that dismal 77% up to 97%. Their delivery cycle time was slashed by 70%, from 27 days down to just 8 days.
Wow, huge difference.
Inventory costs decreased by 42%. They saw an 18% market share growth over 2 years, and customer satisfaction hit a 94% rating, up from 68%. It really highlights the power of standardization with flexibility and taking that end-to-end perspective. It builds inherent resilience and the capacity for increased volume.
That's an incredible transformation story. And finally, let's touch on integrated management systems for creating harmony in operations.
Yeah.
As startups grow, it's so easy to end up with separate siloed systems, one for quality, one for performance tracking, one for risk management, and so on.
Right. And that just leads to redundancy, confusion, conflicting data, wasted effort. It's inefficient.
So integrated management systems, or IMS, aim to fix that.
Precisely. An IMS connects process improvement with these other critical business functions like quality, risk, compliance, environmental management, whatever is relevant. It breaks down the silos.
What are the benefits for a startup?
It reduces redundancy, improves overall efficiency, ensures holistic compliance and performance management. But for startups, this integration isn't just about administrative tidiness. It's often about survival and competitive advantage. It creates the focus and alignment needed to execute efficiently in a resource-constrained environment where every dollar and every minute counts. You can't afford that internal friction.
Let's look at another case, a healthcare research organization. They were facing increasing regulatory complexity, a common headache in that field.
Well, yeah.
They had a high documentation error rate, around 24%, and really long study startup times, averaging over 14 weeks. How did integration help them?
Their solution was fascinating. They built an integrated compliance framework through process excellence. Instead of treating compliance as a separate police function, they embedded the compliance requirements directly into well-designed, efficient processes.
So compliance became part of the workflow.
Exactly. And they automated routine compliance activities where possible. It's amazing how process improvement thinking can impact something as seemingly rigid and external as regulatory compliance.
It really reframes it. What were their results?
Pretty revolutionary for them. Yeah. Their protocol deviation rate, basically, how often they messed up the research plan, was reduced by 76%. Went from affecting 43% of trials down to only 10%.
Huge improvement in quality and reliability.
Massive. Audit findings decreased by 82%. Staff time spent just on compliance activities dropped from 40% of their time down to 15%.
Freeing them up for actual research.
Right. Compliance costs were reduced by 28%. And maybe most impressively, new research contracts actually increased by 133% because they were seen as more reliable and efficient.
Wow.
It clearly demonstrates how that process first, integrated thinking builds in flexibility and the capacity to handle higher volume and complexity, even in a super highly regulated environment. It's about building compliance into the workflow, not just layering it on top as an afterthought.
Wow. We've really unpacked a lot here. It's clear how process optimization moves far, far beyond simple efficiency gains. It truly is the absolute bedrock for scalability.
It really is.
Making your operations agile, resilient, and actually capable of handling that incredible growth, that 10x growth, without buckling under the pressure. It's about proactively designing processes that inherently grow with you.
Turning that potential chaos, that growth chaos, into a powerful competitive advantage.
Absolutely. So for you, our listener, here's an actionable takeaway from today's deep dive. Take a moment, maybe later today or this week, to consider a current process bottleneck in your own scaling operations, something that feels like it's creaking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, brainstorm ways you could redesign it, but don't just think about fixing the current problem. Think about how you could redesign it to truly handle, say, a 5x increase in volume or demand. How would that change your approach? What would need to be different?
That's a great exercise. It forces a different level of thinking.
Definitely. And maybe a final provocative thought to leave you with. As you look to the future of your business, how can you shift your mindset? Move from merely fixing problems as they pop up to proactively designing processes that anticipate and even embrace the challenges of explosive growth.
Turning that potential chaos into your most powerful competitive advantage.
Exactly. How do you build scalability in from the start? Something to really chew on.